Today is Monday, September 18th. We're going to work on finishing up tissues today, connective, muscle, and nervous. All right, so connective tissues begin on page 45. This is our second major or general category for tissues. And we know that these tissues tend to have no apical surface, nor do they have a basement membrane. That's the category that we described pretty much about a week or so ago with epithelial tissues. Some features that you're going to find in pretty much every connective tissue is a non-living matrix that you can see. And you may also see some number of fibers that are made by fibroblast in that tissue tide. So I do want to mention that a lot of tissues, not just connective tissues, have a matrix, a non-living substance secreted by the cells. It's just in the connective tissues that the matrix is really visible. And so that's why we often say the connective tissues have a really visible matrix for us to see. All right, so what is the specific type of connective tissue shown here? Osseous tissue good or compact bone. Do you know the type of matrix found here? What kind of matrix? Lamellae, good. And they're made up of hardened calcium. Yeah. So we, of course, get calcium from the foods that we eat. Dairy products are a great source of calcium. Other things like green leafy vegetables can also give us some calcium. The osteoblast in our bone tissue takes out that calcium and deposits it here and makes these ring-like structures. I wanted to show you this one because it's probably one of the better tissues for finding a matrix. Other connective tissues, it's a little more difficult to find a really obvious-looking matrix. Let's talk about three fiber types common to most of our connective tissues. These are blanks on your paper. Number one is collagen or white fibers. You know, when somebody is about to pass out or they've been scared terribly bad, we often see their skin tone pale. No matter what your skin color pales. What we're actually seeing up underneath are those collagen fibers. They make us have a rather white appearance to our skin. So if the blood drains away from a particular area, all we're left with is basically collagen fibers and that bit of melanin that's in your skin. So interesting that the collagens actually give your skin a white coloration from underneath. Now, when we're talking about skin color, we're actually talking about the dermis having those collagen fibers, not that upper epidermis. Elastic fibers actually take on a yellow appearance, and as our name kind of implies, they're very stretchy. They are stretchy, and they can recoil back into their original position. That is unlike the collagen fibers. Those collagen fibers are more like steel cables. They are not meant to be stretchy, and they're really not meant to recoil. Third category here is reticular fibers. These reticular fibers are actually collagen in nature. They just happen to be thinner and more delicate. They're curled somewhat or branched in appearance. All right, so tell me what type of specific connective tissue this is. That's loose areolar, good. Now, you know, the matrix in this picture is a jelly-like fluid. It's hard to see. And it would fill in these white spaces in the background. So it's not really an exciting thing for us to look at. What loose areolar does have is a number of tissue or number of fibers. This is one connective tissue that has all three fiber types. It has these big, thick collagen fibers. They look like steel cables. These thinner elastic fibers even sometimes take on a squiggly appearance. And the third fiber type, reticular, doesn't show up. The reason it doesn't show up is because it requires a reticular stain. Whatever stain they used made collagen and elastic show up, but it didn't make the reticular show up. So we just have to assume that they're there. even though they don't actually show up in this particular picture. More squiggly looking elastic fibers. We know they're great at stretching, like elasticity, you know, and then of course they recoil. They have to be good. They have to be quality elastic fibers, not like underwear that's been worn out, right? Because underwear that's worn out may stretch, but it won't pop back into position. I think we've all had that pair that has to go. Yeah. So that's what elastic fibers are. They're meant to be stretch and recoil. That's how they work best. And then here are some of those reticular fibers. They are thin and branched. They don't have that big steel cable appearance that those collagen fibers have. By the way, what type of tissue is this one? It is connective. It is loose reticular. Good. Let's talk about cells that are common to our connective tissues. Some of our cells will have a blast ending. Some will have a clasp ending. And finally, some will have a site ending, C-Y-T-E. Let's talk about blast. What do they do for a living?
They grow.
They grow, good. So osteoblast grow what?
Osteoblast grow bone.
Grow bone, good. What does a chondroblast grow?
Cartilage.
Cartilage, good. What does an osteoclast do?
Break down,
good. And then of course a site is a mature cell. It neither destroys nor builds. So we think of those as kind of like the ones that have moved on from their earlier days. They're kind of retired cells, you might say. So in this picture, you have some osteo, or actually some fibroblast. They sometimes have a nucleus that shows up in a picture, but nothing else. In fact, if you could see the entire cell shape, it would have a star-shaped appearance. But I don't really see that here. All I see is the fibroblast nucleus. This is bone tissue, and in this picture, the arrows that are blue are going to some really big cells that are called osteoclasts. Their job is to destroy and remodel bone matrix. They're the ones that release calcium into the blood so that you have enough for muscle contractions to occur. These white arrows go to smaller bone cells. Those are called osteoblasts. And what are they doing for a living?
They're building,
yes. So you've got building cells, you've got destroying cells here, all in the same picture. Now, in terms of types of connective tissues, there are six that fall into a connective tissue proper category. We call them CT proper, or fibrous CT, because they contain visible fibers. They're easy to remember because they're just the loose and the dense types. What this leaves out is cartilage, bone, and blood. They are neither fibrous CT nor CT proper, but nonetheless, they're still categorized in this group. All right, so let's take a tour. I know you guys have seen the pictures in lab, but let's talk about what each one of these does and where they're located. Let's first take our loose connective tissues. The word loose here implies the arrangement. They are not tightly packed tissues. They're very loosely organized. But don't make that thought come into your head that, oh, they're loosely organized. They must not be very strong tissues. Oh, wow, these are some incredibly strong tissues, even though they appear to be loosely organized. This one is loose areolar connective tissue. It is a type of fibrous CT or CT proper, and it has all three fiber types. So you can easily spot the collagen fibers running through here. You've got these thinner elastic fibers, and like, you know, we talked before, it takes a special dye to make those reticular fibers show up. So, you know, don't fall in the trap of saying, okay, it just has two of the three fiber types. There actually are reticular fibers. They're just not apparent in this picture. All right, you got some fibroblast nuclei, lots of them here. What are they doing?
Making fibers.
Good. They're growing new collagen, elastic, and reticular fibers. Where do you find loose areolar connective tissue? Good. Wraps around organs, bound around body cavities. Skin. Good. It's in the deeper part of our skin. Good. You ever cook with raw chicken? You notice that white, shiny stuff on the chicken breast or the chicken meat that's really hard to get off? Mm-hmm. That is partly loose areolar connective tissue. If you've ever skinned an animal, whether it's, you know, from hunting or either cooking something like chicken, that white stuff on there is oftentimes called fascia, and it includes some of this loose areolar connective tissue. If you've ever tried to separate, say, skin from underlying meat on, say, chicken breast or turkey, sometimes it's really hard to disconnect those two, and that's because this loose areolar connective tissue is a great binding and packaging material. I kind of think of it like, you know, packaging tape. You know, it may be thin in appearance, but boy, that stuff can wrap stuff. You know, that's really tough and tight. So that's what loose areolar is meant to be. It's meant to be a packaging material. All right, so a couple of different pictures here of loose areolar. Let's talk about loose adipose connective tissue. First impressions, what did this one look like to you?
Marshmallows.
What else? Air pockets, yeah. Cotton balls, yeah, I've heard that one too. So what in fact are these big cells?
Adipose.
Adipose, yeah, they're adipocytes. They store adipose or triglycerides. So it is their job to store extra energy. So here's the nasty little story about adipocytes. They will divide when you're a kid and give you extra storage cells for fat. When you're an adult, that's your population of adipocytes. And so if you don't have all of them filled up, as an adult, if you eat extra, then of course there's more fat stored to those adipocytes. So if you're a kid and you're really skinny as a kid, then you don't actually have extra adipocytes. They don't reproduce at maturity. They only reproduce during your childhood years. So that's how childhood obesity can lead into adulthood obesity, because all of these adipocytes reproduce during our childhood years. Even if you have liposuction and you suck out your adipocytes, the ones that remain behind will still store adequate levels of fat tissue for you. And so we can regain the weight if we have existing adipocytes sucked out. That's how they're evil, right? They're hard to get rid of. These are adipocyte nuclei. They're kind of shoved over to the side. There's not a lot of room for them. And I do want to show you this picture. This is a blood vessel. There is a great blood supply to adipose tissue, and that means that fat is delivered on a daily basis to these adipocytes, so they can swell and store as much fat as we're willing to put there. That's why liposuction is a dangerous thing. If you happen to suck away these adipocytes and break those blood vessel connections, what could happen to a person?
Bleed to death,
yeah. And there's been stories every few years of somebody having like a hotel room liposuction facility. Oh my gosh, no way, you know, because if they hook up some kind of vacuum cleaner to your fat and try to suck it out, you could bleed out from that. So certainly a dangerous prospect. Okay, so where are some locations for loose adipose?
Around the heart.
Breast tissue around the heart.
Abdomen.
Under the skin, hypodermis. Okay. All right, loose reticular is our next loose tissue type, and it contains what fibers?
Reticular.
Yes, so easy to remember there. I've had people tell me this looks like rose bushes or grapevines. Yeah, and even at this magnification, it does look like that. So what kinds of fibers are these?
Reticular.
And what kinds of cells are these? Fibroblasts, good. Lots of fibroblasts to grow those reticular fibers. All the white space in the background here is actually a jelly-like matrix, just like you saw for loose adipose and for loose areolar. That matrix is not a very solid matrix. It's more of a liquid or a jelly-like matrix in the background. All right, so where do you find this tissue?
Liver.
Kidneys, spleen,
bone marrow,
lymph nodes, okay? And if you look at the magnified picture of it, it looks kind of like the cytoskeleton. Inside of a cell, we have a cytoskeleton that provides an internal framework. Well, if you move up to the tissue level, this particular tissue forms a framework for organs like the liver and lymph nodes, spleen, and so on. So I kind of think of it like cytoskeleton's bigger cousin. It does form a framework. The tissue skeleton is sometimes what they call it. All right, let's talk about our dense connective tissue types. We've got regular, irregular, and elastic. What do we mean by dense regular?
It is real purdy looking.
Real purdy looking. What kind of fibers here?
Collagen,
good. And in what direction do they run?
One
way straight.
Good, one way straight. They're a good strong attachment. And if you think about it, since they're running the length of this picture here, if I pull or tug in the direction those collagen fibers run, then there's great strength and it's not going to give way to me pulling on it. So where would you find this particular kind of tissue?
Kind of like
tendons.
Tendons.
Ligaments.
Ligaments, good. Which one of those attaches bone to bone?
Ligaments.
Good. And muscle to bone?
Tendons.
Tendons, good. I had a student several years ago and she had a trick for remembering that. She said, Larry buys books, LBB, ligaments bind bone to bone. And so as I was asking you guys that question, guess what I was saying? Larry buys books. Okay, so ligaments bind bone to bone. Ligaments bind bone to bone. And of course, tendons bind muscle to bone. So Larry buys books, ligaments bind bone to bone. And so that means tendons bind muscle to bone. Why do they call this one a dense tissue?
They're so tightly packed together.
Tightly packed, right? Okay.
No space.
No space. And notice these dark spots? These are fibroblast nuclei. And these wavy things here are actually collagen fibers. So we've squeezed the heck out of this tissue. There's no room for anything to come in here. Notice there's no blood vessels in here. There's not a really great blood supply we've woven through this tissue. I make that point because if you damage a tendon or a ligament, what is your heal time?
Very long.
Long, painful time. Yes, if you sprain an ankle or a wrist, yeah, you're looking at weeks, maybe months of physical therapy to get that stuff healed. If you tear it bad enough, they have to surgically repair this kind of tissue because it is not really one to grow very fast. Let's see, our next one is called dense irregular connective tissue. What is irregular about it?
It's all over the place.
Okay, so what kind of fibers are all over the place? Collagen. Good. So I think this looks like a raw pork chop.
Looks like a pork chop just got out of the meat grinder.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? This one too. So these dark spots here, these are fibroblast nuclei. You notice there's not a whole lot of them here. They're scattered throughout this connective tissue. And these are, like you said, irregularly bundled collagen fibers. So they're going in all sorts of different directions throughout this tissue. Now, if I were to pull or tug in any direction, we've got fibers that kind of create this network. So again, it creates a very strong tissue that takes pull and tug from any direction. For that reason, where do you find dense irregular?
The dermis
of the skin, good.
And the capsules of joints.
Capsules of joints, good. So thinking about the dermis of your skin, it has to stay intact. In fact, if you tear it, it doesn't heal. That's what stretch marks are, okay? So this tissue has to be strong. It connects your epidermis to the underlying tissues. So if torn, it's not one that's likely to repair itself. Here's the gross fact for the day. Leather products are made from dermises of animals. And in
leather products.
Animal products, leather products are made from, say, cow dermis. If you have alligator purse, it's alligator dermis. Yeah. If you've got a snake skin pair of boots, that's snake dermis. and ooh gross, in the libraries of Europe, there are actually some books with human dermis.
That's nasty.
Yeah, I've heard about
that. That make the binding or the cover of the book. So how nasty. Ugh.
That was very sick and twisted.
That was. You want to dedicate your body to science? You're making books, you know, I mean, no.
I like everything where it is.
Yeah, no kidding. Reminds me of Science of the Lambs.
Yeah.
So here's a good picture of the dermis of our skin. You'll notice the epidermis up top is actually a really thin portion, and all of this stuff down below is dermis. Those, once again, are fibroblast nuclei. They're the little dark spots here that grow new fibers if needed. But like we talked, it's a slow growing effort. So if you damage the dermis or joint capsules, then you're looking at a very long heal time. All right. Dense elastic connective tissue is, as the name implies, very stretchy. It has what types of fibers?
Elastic fibers.
Good. And what is their job? Stretch, good, and recoil, good. So where might you find some dense elastic connective tissue?
In your heart.
What part?
The aorta.
Aorta, okay. Where else?
Vocal cords.
Vocal cords, good. So thinking about your aorta and your vocal cords, those are two locations that need the ability to stretch and recoil back to their original shape. If your aorta stretches and cannot recoil back, then we see things like aneurysms develop where the vessel can rupture. If your vocal cords stretch and don't go back to their original shape, what happens to you?
Lose your voice.
Lose your voice, yeah, become mute. All right, let's talk about cartilage. You're gonna have to flip the page with me. So we've checked off our list the loose and dense proper types of connective tissue. We're now moving to some, I guess you would say, improper connective tissues. These don't have the visible fibers that we expected to see in our loose and dense categories. Our first type of cartilage is called hyaline cartilage. It is the most common cartilage in our bodies. And it has a smooth, glassy appearance. You're gonna hear me say that about 10 times as we talk through this one. You'll notice that there are very few fibers that are visible in that matrix. And what you do have, though, are air pockets with little chondrocytes inside. What are those air pockets called? Lacunae, good. Lacuna means tiny lake. And even though it's not a lake filled with water, it's a lake filled with air. And inside that lacuna is a tiny osteocyte and a bone cell, bone tissue. But in this case, we're looking at cartilage, so it's a tiny chondrocyte. So we, in fact, have lacuna in both bone tissue and in cartilage tissue. Here's another picture of that smooth, glassy hyaline cartilage. You'll notice that we've got lots of lacunae, and there's that chondrocyte in there with the nucleus showing up. And you can probably see in the background some of these fibers. What kind of fibers are common to hyaline cartilage? Collagen. Good. Describe the function of collagen fibers.
Reduce frictions.
Collagen fibers, are they stretchy?
Yes, they're
flexible. They are flexible. Are they strong or are they delicate?
Strong,
yeah, so they're strong, they're flexible, they're like they're steel cables. Why is that characteristic important for hyaline cartilage connective tissue? It's on the end of your long bones, good. And what happens all the time at the ends of your long bones?
Friction,
yeah. So if you think about your nose, for instance, this wiggly portion of your nose that can move is hyaline cartilage. The ends of your long bones, of course, that's hyaline. There needs to be a degree of flexibility, but still we have to have the strength in those locations. So it's an important, very common type of cartilage in our bodies. It is the most common type that we've got. Besides the ends of your long bones and your nose, where else do you find it?
Isn't it lining your nasal?
yeah, trachea, nasal cavity.
And larynx.
Skeleton.
Larynx, yeah, fetal skeleton. That's a pretty good list. Okay. More of that smooth, glassy background appearance there. You'll notice that it is hard to see the fibers in the background. Mostly what you see looks to me like eyeball soup. You've simply got those chondrocytes and lacuna, and that's about all you get. So these are all hyaline cartilage, still more hyaline cartilage, and then let's compare that to fiber cartilage. Now you no longer see that smooth, glassy background. What do you see instead?
Fibers,
good. What types of fibers?
Collagen.
Good. Anything else here?
You still see some lacuna too.
You see lacuna too, yeah, you're right. There's some elastic here too, but there's a lot of collagen and elastic fibers in that matrix, and you don't get that smooth, glassy background appearance here. Fiber cartilage is a very tough type of cartilage, and it's found in places that generally deteriorate over a lifetime. What do old people complain about hurting all the time?
Joints.
Which joints?
Knee joints.
Yes. So we'll leave the other joints out. We'll just talk about knees for right now because they're the ones that contain fiber cartilage, right? And old people talk about their backs hurting. So that's another location that we find fiber cartilage in those discs between your vertebrae. Okay. So you think about fiber cartilage, think about old people complaining about their knees and their back. We're all headed there, right? Do you notice as many chondrocytes this time? Yeah, compare that back to, say, hyaline cartilage. That has a lot more chondrocytes than those lacunae, but seems to be less of them here in fiber cartilage. Okay. Here's a shot of elastic cartilage, and as name implies, it has, guess what kind of fibers?
Elastic.
Describe the nature of an elastic fiber.
Like
a rubber band, yeah, and like good underwear that stretches and recoils. Gotta have them both, right? Okay. So that's the nature of elastic cartilage. It needs the stretchiness, it needs to recoil back to its original shape. And a lot of these pictures, to me, it looks like a bunch of angry alligator teeth. There's a lot of chondrocytes piled in there together, so much so that they almost crowd out the appearance of the elastic fibers.
Looks like the alligator got old,
yeah, fall out. The way to remember this one is keep the E straight. Elastic cartilage has elastic fibers and it's found in two E locations.
Ear and epiglottis.
Good. Ear and epiglottis. So you can bend your ear all around, it pops back and recoils to its original shape. And where's your epiglottis found? Top of your trachea, right? It closes off your air passageway so you don't swallow food. Into your trachea, that is. Hey, just for fun, guess what is on either side of this elastic cartilage?
Dentirregular.
Yep, that's it. All right, so that takes us to our last two types of connective tissues, bone and blood. And we oftentimes say, well, you know, they're so different. Why put them in a category with cartilage and tendons and ligaments? So what function do they serve?
Support.
Yeah, support, protection, what else?
Transportation.
They do transportation, good. So because they share some of those same types of functions, we put them in this category. These two tissues also have a non-living matrix that's very visible. That's another reason to put them here. So they tend to share more features with the other connective tissues than they do with any other type of tissue in your body. So that's why we place them here in this grouping. This is probably one of the easiest tissues to spot. Compact bone, right? All right, so what are these cells?
Osteocytes.
Osteocytes, good. Are they building bone, breaking it down, or mature cells?
Mature cells.
Mature cells, good. Back in their heyday, they were osteoblasts. And what did they do for a living?
Build.
Good. And they're in fact the ones that built these rings called lamellae. And those rings are made up of calcium salts. So it's kind of like building a house and walling yourself in, and you spend the rest of your life in between the walls, and somebody brings you food. That's what osteoblasts do. They got built into the connective tissue. They're trapped there, and little tiny canals bring them food for the rest of their lives. God, how awful, right?
It looks like a tree heart. It does.
That's a very good way to spot this one. So what is the function of compact bone tissue? Structure?
Support.
Good. What else happens here?
Hematopoiesis.
Yeah, that's probably a better one for it. Yeah. So, what is hematopoiesis?
Blood cell formation.
Good. I would probably put cartilage more as a shock absorber than bone tissue, yeah. All right, and our last type of connective tissue is blood, which of course is a connective tissue because it has a matrix. What do we call the matrix of blood?
Plasma.
Good. Now, here's the thing. It's actually gone from this slide. It has evaporated, and all you see left behind are the formed elements. The red blood cells are also known as what?
Erythrocytes.
Good. Leukocytes, what are they?
White blood cells.
Good. And the last type is?
Platelets.
Good. So we look at those as being three types of cells common to our blood. What are some of the functions of blood?
Carries oxygen.
Good. Transports oxygen.
It carries waste.
Good. Transports waste.
Thermoregulation.
Good. Maintains body temperature. Immunity. Good. Helps to fight off invaders. That's a great function there. Good. Okay. So, really for the lecture part of this test, what you want to focus on is functions. I was getting ahead of myself, and locations. So, you know, if it helps to have the picture handy just to jog your memory, do it. But otherwise, I'm not going to test you on pictures come test day.
Those holes, we know the location of each of these functions.
Location and function. I may also throw out a description to you. Like I may say we've got erythrocytes and leukocytes, what kind of tissue is it? So you'll want to know some keywords like that.
And we'll need to know two functions.
That probably cover you. Because it's multiple choice, I may ask you to pick it out of a list. All right, any questions on connective tissues?
There's possibilities where you still may ask about the cell type or the fiber type.
And I'll give you more than just, I have fibroblasts. I'll give you something much more descriptive, like this particular tissue has adipocytes, it has fibroblasts. I'll give you something to work with. Because I don't want to give you so little that it leaves too many options on the table. All right, looks like we're ready for some muscle tissues. All right, and of course they come from page 48. So we're back to a general category level once again. We're going to leave behind the issue of the matrix. We're going to leave behind the fibroblast. We're also going to leave behind what we learned about with epithelial tissues and the apical surface and basement membrane. This time, when we're looking at muscle tissue, we're looking for cylindrical cells, and the job here is to provide some type of movement or contraction where that tissue is going to shorten for us. There are three types here. We've got skeletal, cardiac, and smooth muscle tissue. Let's break down how they're similar and how they're different. Which of these three is located in the heart only?
Cardiac.
Good, cardiac. Which one of these moves our bones?
Skeletal.
Good. Which two types are involuntary?
Cardiac and smooth.
Good, cardiac and smooth. And of course, there are two types that are striated.
Skeletal and cardiac.
Skeletal and cardiac, good. Which type is found in the wall of your intestines?
Smooth muscle.
Smooth muscle, good. Which type lacks striations and is involuntary?
Smooth muscle,
good. Okay. So let's take skeletal muscle first. It looks like a striped snake or a striped straw. You'll notice that these are long cylindrical cells and they are multinucleate. So when they got their start in life, when you were young, they were connecting together bones. You know, and the tendons, of course, grew from the ends of those muscles. Let's think about your quadriceps and your femur area for just a moment. The quadriceps muscles may be a foot, foot and a half long, depending on your height. When these muscle cells grew together, they joined forces and they became multinucleate. So they started life as individual separated cells, but they matured into cells that are really joined all end to end. So that's how we end up with really long, thin muscle fibers that make up our muscle tissue. Now, for that reason, they also don't heal very quickly. If you have to wait for torn muscle tissue to regrow and connect to other cells, you're waiting a very long time. That's why skeletal muscle tissue is not one that heals very fast. Really pretty look here at some multinucleate setup in these skeletal muscle cells. These, of course, are nuclei, and this striation or banding pattern is characteristic of skeletal muscle tissue. We say this tissue is voluntary. What does that mean? You think it, you move it, right? So this tissue is voluntary. It's the only tissue type that is under voluntary control. All right, let's compare that to cardiac muscle tissue. Cardiac muscle is also striated, but notice how these fibers run. Back when we looked at skeletal muscle, they laid right on top of other muscle tissues. Here in cardiac, though, notice these muscle fibers stand separate from one another. Okay, so what else is a feature that you find only in cardiac muscle?
Intercalated
discs. So it looks like we've got one right there, and that serves as a gap junction that allows a flow of ions from one cell to the next cell. What are gap junctions? Yeah, you allow stuff to flow, right? So when we were talking about it, I used the example of being in hotel rooms and having the scary doorway to the neighbor's room. Yeah, that's a gap junction. So you don't have to mess with all the plasma membrane features. They're just pores or openings that go between adjacent cells. If you're working with nerve impulse transmission, you want to have the nerve impulse travel very quickly from one cell to the next, and that's what these intercalated discs allow for. All right, so that's one feature unique to our cardiac muscle tissue. What's another one?
Branched,
yeah.
It's like a bark on a tree.
Kind of does, you're right. Looks like knotty bark on a tree. And so this branching feature is also unique to cardiac muscle. This allows for a nerve impulse to travel throughout our muscle tissue and the heart simultaneously and allow for more or less a unison contraction. And that's what we want. We don't want your heart contracting out of sync like a bowl full of jello. I like this picture simply because it has pretty intercalated discs. They do show up really well in this one. All right, and our last type of muscle tissue is called smooth muscle tissue, and it's smooth because it doesn't have what?
Striations.
Good. So no striations here, and this one is described as being a spindle-shaped tissue. What this means is they're fat in the middle, like a snake that had a meal, and they taper off to either end, just like a snake body would. So these are not cylindrical in shape like you have in cardiac muscle or skeletal muscle. So sometimes people get this one confused with dense regular connective tissue. I just want to make a point. I know you guys are done with your lab test, but these are all nuclei that belong to each of these smooth muscle tissue cells. And if you lay smooth muscle next to dense regular connective tissue, there are those nuclei once again. And you get much more of a wavy appearance when you've got collagen fibers alone. So I know that we're done with the lab test, but that is a way to kind of compare those two tissues. All right, so what is a function of smooth muscle tissue?
It lines like your
Peristalsis. Good. How would you describe peristalsis?
Squeeze.
Yes, a squeeze and a relax, and a squeeze and a relax. And it can do it for hours and not get tired, which is different from your skeletal muscle, which does tire very quickly over a short period of time. So yeah, this one is good for peristalsis. Besides your intestinal walls, where else do you find this one?
In the digestive tract.
GI tract?
Urinary tract.
Urinary tract?
Blood vessels,
good.
Walls of hollow organs.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? Walls of hollow organs that you have no control over. That includes blood vessels, digestive tract, urinary tract, even parts of our reproductive tract. So, you know, a lot of that stuff is just under involuntary control. All right, let's talk about nervous tissue. That's our last major category. Probably the easiest way to identify nervous tissue, which has no specific types, is to look for those neurons. And I think neurons kind of look like a steamrolled octopus. They've got that nucleus shining out at you and these extensions that come off. The extensions that come off are called axons or
dendrites.
Good. And we'll learn a little more later about what each of those processes do. They're carrying information either to or from that nucleus area, but we'll look more into detail later on with those. There's a lot of stuff going on in the background here. That support type of cell is called what? All of this support stuff is called neuroglia. Yeah. So you've got neurons that conduct nerve impulses, and you've got neuroglia that are going to be support cells. They insulate, they protect. So what are some of the functions or features of nervous tissue? Good. Send and receive impulses or messages. Good. Good. That's a really pretty picture of a neuron. Okay. How about questions so far? Anything on connective, muscle, nervous tissue? All right, so let me take you to page 50 and talk about tissue injury for just a moment. At the very top of your page, we have a couple of blanks to fill in. Let's first look at the types of tissues that heal quickly versus those that heal slowly. So we've talked about a number of different general categories of tissue. One type that heals quickly is what?
Epithelial.
Good. Let's add that to the quickly healing category. Loose, good, that's another one. Loose connective tissues. They do heal quickly. Since we're in the connective tissue category, anything else here heal fast?
Blood.
Blood, good. It's got to, right, or we'd die.
Bone tissue.
Bone, good. Muscle tissue categories. Anything there heal quickly?
Smooth muscle.
Good. So if you think about the importance of smooth muscle being found in the walls of hollow organs, it'd be really bad if we had blood vessels that did not heal fast, or say a digestive organ that was damaged and needed to heal. Those areas are going to heal quickly. So let's turn to our slowly or poorly healing category. Let's talk about connective tissues. What would you put down here?
Dense connective.
Dense, good. Dense connective tissue. How about cartilage? cartilage is slow to heal.
Skeletal,
and I heard one of you say cardiac. That's good. Yes, yeah, so skeletal and cardiac, they do not like to heal. That's bad news if you damage heart muscle tissue, right?
Yep. What about nervous?
Nervous, good. That's our last one. So examples like tendons, ligaments, dermis of your skin, hyaline cartilage that forms the cushioning between bones, you know, broken nose doesn't like to heal either, and of course heart muscle tissue from a heart attack or skeletal muscle tissue that's damaged and torn, and then spinal cord, brain, and all the other nerves that connect it back and forth, all of those are going to be slow to heal. So when healing does take place to a tissue, one of the things that we do see is called inflammation. I know we've all experienced the uncomfortable effects of inflammation before, but inflammation is actually a sign that we're trying to heal a damaged area. So you'll notice on your worksheet that cells called mast cells move into the area. We'll see histamine being released, which acts to make your vessels leak. And by having your vessels leak, we can now bring in healing agents to this damaged area. Prostaglandins, you'll notice, are written there. They're a type of lipid, and they're what makes that inflammatory process so uncomfortable. So some of the medications we take, like, you know, Advil, Tylenol, things of that sort, can block some of this inflammation and make the inflammatory process not feel so nasty and uncomfortable. What we see here is bleeding taking place. That's actually meant to provide, you know, healing agents that can move into the area. And we also see some white blood cells that are going to move into this area. What eventually can happen is we may have some pus that accumulates in this area. All that tells us is that there was inflammation and that blood cells were moving in to basically stop this inflamed area. Pus does not necessarily mean that there was an infection. All it means is that we were healing this damaged or inflamed part of this tissue. I do want to tell you about the four cardinal signs of inflammation. You'll want to highlight these. They're about midway down your page. Inflamed tissues are red hot, swollen, and painful. Inflamed tissues are red, hot, swollen, and painful. So, you know, a mosquito bite can be inflamed. So can a broken bone. So we often take anti-inflammatory medications, to stop those inflammatory effects and to reduce the painful aspect of the inflammation. So here's what histamine does. Notice that it makes the vessel leak. That's a good thing for inflammation. It doesn't feel very good to us because it makes that area that's being inflamed swell. And unfortunately, if a lot of your cells release histamine at one time, that can cause a body-wide loss of fluids to your surrounding cells and tissues. Unfortunately, if you lose fluids to your surrounding cells and tissues, you can have a loss of blood pressure. And we call this anaphylactic shock. So unfortunately, inflammation can actually lead to a really bad case where a person can lose blood pressure and pass out or even die from that situation. This is a histamine reaction. This is inflammation at its worst. You can see the red splotches on the skin here. That comes from some kind of systemic release of histamine, and those tissues are swollen with excess fluid. Yeah, that would be red and hot and swollen to the touch and most likely be quite painful and even itchy. What we end up wanting to happen here is why, for whatever underlying reason the tissue is inflamed, we want to heal the damaged tissue, and we do that by bringing in white blood cells, red blood cells to the area. Like I mentioned, sometimes pus is left behind. If that pus is trapped in a pocket, then it cannot leak and escape. We call it necrosis. And oftentimes it has to be lanced and drained. So that's kind of a worst case scenario. Ultimately, what we leave behind may include some scar tissue. What type of fiber is common in scar tissue? We'll see, we've got collagen, elastic, or reticular. Collagen. Yeah, collagen is common to scar tissue. And unfortunately, scar tissue does not behave like normal tissue. It does not have the same characteristics that you want it to have. How does collagen fiber behave? It's strong.
Like steel cables.
Like steel cables, right. So it's not flexible. It doesn't have the same features that most normal tissues have. So unfortunately, if you leave behind scar tissue, then what you may have is tissue that no longer behaves like it originally did. So that's why when, you know, we're doing surgery or whatnot, we want to make sure that we reduce the amount of scar tissue that we can possibly incur because of its lack of resembling the real thing. We don't really have real behavior and tissue that's scar tissue.
That's what they say when somebody gets, when a person gets a cut, like on their face, like it's like literally like where the scar used to be, like the hair that should have grown there doesn't grow anymore.
That's right. No hair, no glands, no sensory organs, all that stuff is gone. Yeah.
So necrotizing fasciitis starts at this, I guess, baseline, right?
It starts at this baseline, yeah. And then it causes tissue death and then
takes off,
yeah. We'll actually do this again when we talk about skin. We'll do it relative to how skin is healed. It looks like on Wednesday we're going to talk about membranes, which is pages 51, 52, and 50. Oh, that's it, 51 and 52. And then let's plan to start on skin on Wednesday as well. Okay. Do y'all have any questions for today? We're done a couple minutes early, so enjoy. Enjoy 3 free minutes, right?